This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Our guest is Diane Wilbon Parks, and she's here with her new book, and you're gonna love her. Here's an opening poem.
Words matter. This word is condemned to write, like the song must sing to itself, and the paint must find its way to the canvas. The word is born to paper, and so it writes. I see an image of a shadow circling the room. Then it quickly leaves again. I'm committed to searching for it, the shadow, my words. The shadow of my words appear very shy and timid, not boasting of anything, sometimes forced to come out. My words expect you to take notice as they enter the room. I find the light exposing all of us, me, the shadow, the word of words that yields to you, words of contemplation, of marches for justice, for peace, for equality, for fair treatment. I am words that matter because I cannot breathe if I do not write. I am words that, while shy and timid, must find my way. I see the symmetry of color, yours and mine. My words are colorless and blameless and just, and they breathe and not just live, but give meaning to life. I must give my words a place to dance and sing and wallow and create and float and stand up with hands raised and sit down and declare what is right or wrong and never be afraid to speak. There is no favoritism in these words, only the beauty of this flower vase. My voice extended over a rainbow of dance. These words must write themselves, open doors, and speak out loud. I see an image of the shadow circling the room, and then it quickly leaves again. My words, the shadow of words, find a quiet corner and stay there until words are born to paper again. My words will find you.
Oh, Diane Wilbon Parks, your words have found me. I'm so happy to have you here, and you're such a wholehearted poet. There's just so much joy in your language. Now, the title of this book is what?
The Wisdom of Blue Apples.
Your second book. Almost every poem in this book has the word blue in it. What's up with blue?
Well, blue is represents power, wisdom, loyalty, trust. And the blue in this book I have redefined as a color that works well in the marriage of apples and wisdom because it does culminate wisdom and responsibility. I believe that when you are actually working in your gifts and your purpose, you are bluest when you are maximizing and multiplying so that you can feed others as you are doing on this program.
Wow. That is an answer I didn't expect, Diane. And I want to tell everyone a little bit about who you are. She's a poet, obviously, and has published two poetry collections. One was Rearview Thoughts, and now we're hearing The Wisdom of Blue Apples. Diane lives in Maryland, and she's been featured at the University of Maryland, Barnes & Noble, local cafes and coffee houses. She's been in the American Poets Society's anthologies and Famous Poets Society's anthology collection, Great Poems of the Western World. She has spoken to high schools and inspires students to stop texting and start writing. Let's hear another poem.
This poem is called Imagine. My most ambitious thought is to share a bowl of red grapes with you in the center of a bed in a sunlit white room in the middle of Savannah, Georgia, where abolitionists turned into lighthouses, becoming beacons for the world. What if we could walk back into pictures and into the Jordan River, push back the eyelids of dawn, and follow field flowers into hills along forgotten paths? They tell you where they want to grow and show you how far you have to climb to reach the other side of hope. Imagine giving life to eyes of hopelessness and faces that never smile. What if people found a common ground to stand on where the gift of love overflows unconditionally over and over? What if we are much wiser than owls told us we'd be? What if all of our dreams were waiting for us in our left hand, and the keys to realize those dreams were in our right hand? Imagine our garden sprouting with seeds of purpose, turning us into lighthouses. Imagine our arms are beautiful ribbons extended across the world, and the tapestry of our skin is the gift wrap holding the presence of Christ. Just imagine.
Well, Diane, were you always a child of wonder?
Always.
You were born with the ability to appreciate?
Yes, I have a great appreciation for writing.
And is this a gift that you just knew as a little girl was yours, that you saw the world through this paradigm? Because that poem glitters with visuals, so you're somebody who notices everything.
Everything.
And are you an artist as well?
I am.
There's a lot of light and figures in your, and a lot of articles and objects. And so we're going to hear another poem, and then we're going to take it apart.
Okay. The message of bloom. I can tell when flowers panic. I can hear the loss of air in their leaves. I can tell when they've given up, when the budding petals become too afraid to blossom. Flowers used to look up to us, but they've learned that we're without substance, without souls. We've consumed the earth, buried the essence of what makes us naturally beautiful. The magnolias worry for us. The sunflowers pray for us. The dandelions weep for us. The tulips sing for us. The hibiscus bleeds for us. The hydrangeas sleep for us. The roses breathe for us. The violets speak for us. They stand still even when their stems are folded. They listen to the sun and reason with the bees. We've abandoned the message of bloom. They ease down with the silence of peace, hand us the weight of their bloom, and hope for us to mend ourselves into something right, into something as vulnerable as the mist of morning dew.
She is a senior IT program manager. That means you know how to turn the computer on and off.
Yes, I do.
Wow. And a United States Air Force veteran. Now, it's a cliche, but thank you for your service. I really mean it. And she has her undergraduate degree in information systems management from the University of Maryland, University College, and then certifications in project management. And you live in Maryland with your husband, Eric, and two children, Sean and Shelby, who are grown now.
Yes.
And the dog, is he grown?
Not yet.
Cooper?
Cooper.
Okay. How much of your week is dedicated to poetry? You have a house, you've got kids, you have a full-time job. What percentage of time do you give yourself?
I would say probably half the time. I write so much a part of me that writing has become a staple in my life, in that if I'm stressed or even at work, I take breaks and I can look out of the window and see a bird dancing on a branch. Poetry is in everything. It's in my daily life. It's that I come home and I write. I love poetry.
So all of us have other jobs, but you're right. If poetry is your life force, it is never away. It's not something we do on Saturdays.
Right.
And obviously, it is your life force. Diane Wilbon Parks, and she's here with her new book, and she's going to read us another poem. What's this title?
In Between the Sheet. Seduce the paper in wait. Touch it with words and let them rise up to you. Somehow saying yes to it feels complete and smart on the back of tall necks. Somehow eyes no longer hide behind the gates of fingers, fingers that resemble the shape of tulips, and arms slender like stems. No stone unturned. Tell that stone to turn it loose. Transform your soul into something useful like paper. green with limbs. Put on a pair of sturdy hips that eagerly twist decisions into promises, while the sound of peace looks for locked doors. Stuff unfolding words into shoes where common sense does not rust. Prune the fields of colorless things and replace them with women and clean feet. Follow the field flowers into hills and forgotten paths. Lay down your last song like spoons propping up drawers. Now loose me in sideburns, then burn me beside the cheeks of soft-spoken men nicknamed after rivers. Let my words crawl to you like mud flowers. Let them dance with you on the back of your dreams. Let them hold your green thumbs under blue moons and crooked water. Let my words stain your lips like defeated roses, crushed between the small arms of absolution. Then plead with dawn to wake me up. Stand me up, but don't separate me from this sheet of paper, because this is where ponytails become ropes, and where my husband was once a cool cucumber and is now a pickle. This is where I lay, I dance, I sleep, I create poetry babies. Close the window. Close the curtain, shut the door. This is where we become one.
You are real. You are real. Men whose names or nicknames are after rivers.
Yes.
Where did you get that?
You know, these wonderful words come to me sometimes in my dream.
Ah. Do you get up and scribble them down real fast?
I absolutely have
to. You do. My husband said it's like sleeping in a gas station. The light goes on and off all night.
Yes.
And you say sound of peace looks for locked doors. Does that mean that peace can be found if we can unlock those doors?
Absolutely. I think that those doors really allow us to go into a space and to create.
Do your children understand this?
I don't know that they get me.
Is it okay?
It's okay, though.
Do they tolerate it?
They love it, but they understand that this is a passion that I have, and it's not going anywhere. I love it.
I know. I always felt that poetry took too much food from our table. I had four children. I always felt poetry got a bigger share of food than any of the kids did.
Yes.
But you know, Lucille Clifton's kids always said, "Mom's doing her poetry stuff." It was just something Mom did.
Yes.
I hear this great icon, Lucille Clifton.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And do they read your books?
They do. But again, now my son will say, "You're very abstract, Mom. You are very metaphoric." And sometimes I have been asked, even at the University of Maryland, to come and to do some poems and then to do some analysis. Students have been given sheets and try to analyze my poetry, which is wonderful. Yeah, and I love it because sometimes you write in one fashion, but when you hear someone else's interpretation, it's amazing that the poem can mean so many different things to so many different people.
That would be a successful poem because the reader brings his own experience. And let's hear another successful poem. This is The Poet and the Poem. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Diane Wilbon Parks is filling the room with light.
Say something. I am not so convinced. No, I am not convinced Black Lives Matter. Bullets bleed, handcuffed and tasered. Death says I can't breathe. Black lives tapered. Ain't no four-leaf clovers, only double negatives. Forced to believe what we see isn't true. So we dance and march and stand like the 60s with signs in our hands. Songs in black bark, rose in red. Voices hard and musty. Justice is dead.
Now I'm going to ask for two more poems read together so we get a healthy taste of who you are. Diane Wilbon Parks, I'm Grace Cavalieri.
Reverse the moon. Today was gone. I put it on backwards, along with the shirt, buttons looking inside. A visible rain cloud flooded my jeans. I realized that water runs perfectly upside down. And planted an apple tree in my shoe. I crawled into a small paper bag of drool and peeled the world right from the same old splintered ceiling. Though thoughts became louder than squirrels sifting through dried leaves, they were committed to finding a hiding place. The streets were crowded with fragments of my ideas, a good portion of my instincts, twisted like moon dust. Best place to be in pandemonium is stocking shelves with jelly preserves and parables from the Bible. Today, I live in New York and Europe, though I am right here. There's an old man sweeping a winding road in the slopes of Germany. His house is dirty in June. His steps are speckled with the crystal sap of cedar trees and golden strands of sunlight falling easterly on a miniature crack in the rightmost corner of a window that occupies most of his life. The afternoon keeps him in the frame of windows as he waits for purpose. My thoughts begin to litter his street. He leaves the dirty house to sweep the street, free of me and my instincts. Today was gone. I put it on backwards, along with my clothes. I wore suspenders to hold up thoughts too afraid of being cleaned, and a moon too shy to poke holes in belt loops long enough to measure smiles at the corner of leaflet tongues. I pray something good comes out of me. I wear the scarves of spinsters who live in Bedfordshire. I was married once in England and was told that spinsters are taught at least six conversations to fill a room of bachelors. Never stood on my head or walked on ceilings in Biggleswade. I stepped out of my living room into the busiest avenue in New York and swam upstream in the Mosel River in Germany. I suppose the most memorable part of my day was the biggest green eyes of a six-year-old Cambodian girl. She needed me to send money. She gave me her belly. I gave her my pockets. She gave me her teeth. And I gave her the moon of my heart.
Oh.
Somehow I got turned around.
Oh, Diane, you are magic. You are magic. I want to get inside your head and sit there and just watch all these things go on.
Yeah.
Where do they come from? Was that something you accumulated many images day after day and day, collected them?
I do that a lot of times. That is true, but once I'm in the flow of a poem, everything starts coming.
Really?
Everything just...
You have a lot of traffic.
I have a lot of traffic. I have a lot of traffic.
Give us another one, and then we're going to pull one apart.
Okay, this one is called The Naked Truth. You should always want to be exposed. Be vulnerable to something, anything. Cover nothing. Open your cage. Take your skin off. Reach the smallest part of you that wants to be clear like glass. Even the smallest cell recognizes that it has to be vulnerable to grow into something important. Things are born of us. We collide, we expand, we build, we break. We become stronger in nakedness. Contemplate the rationale of judgment. Embrace the experience of exposure. Force that part of you that recognizes the need for it. Truth. Reach for it. Live uncovered. Never live in a space of compromised truth. You will find that everything shrinks there, even air.
We're stronger when naked.
Yes.
When we're vulnerable?
When we're absolutely vulnerable.
How did you learn that?
Through just growth, through experience, through exposure.
What was your mother like?
My mother is one of the most amazing women that I know. And she was the strongest woman that I know. And she was vulnerable. And she allowed us to see that. And even through her vulnerability, she was strong.
I knew that.
Yes.
I knew that. I'm going to ask you to take one of your poems and read it to us,
mm-hmm.
and then tell us where you were when you got the idea, how you put it together, and just take us through the process. Let us live with you as you wrote that poem. So which one have you chosen for that?
Music to My Ear. You play inside musical notes that slip away to have coffee, then linger at the base of crescendos like drums, leaving tunnels inside me. The cord of my vein is traced with legends of you, slanted in prepositional phrases of love. Cricket-like elbows, misplaced on purpose, hanging out of shelves and sentences, and me. There's an unnatural syncopation of rhythm that happens when I balance you over the bridge of London, where thoughts turn into songs. Why does it rain in my head when I think of you? My hair becomes long, heavy, wet leaves, and my head a turntable of droopy love songs. Your voice calls around the first star and the most intimate part of my ear, the drum, and waits for the bass of your voice, then beats the moon. There is an eighth note that slips away to dance with you, then quickly turns into a promise and a sheet of music. I beat the drum at midnight. Fetch the north star from the sky, place it neatly on your pillow, and curl inside your ripened notes.
You're not afraid. You're not afraid of anything.
No.
You're not afraid of being judged. You're not afraid of being criticized. You're not afraid to be told you can't write.
No, absolutely not.
So tell us about how you got here.
I believe at 11 years old that I certainly was given a gift of writing. It is something that I know. I may not know a lot of things, but that certainly is one thing that I know. And in this poem is very clear to me that this is a love poem. This is a poem about what happens when she stays into a musical note and falls in love with this person that makes her linger, even in music, makes her stop. So this is a beautiful song or verse of poems that I've written for some. Sometimes I find a little part of me in some of these poems, not always. But this one is for couples, for people who fall in love.
It'd be a good wedding poem.
Yes, I think it would be.
Do you like that poem?
I love this poem because this poem has a lot to do with how I, you know, use metaphors in this poem.
Show us one.
Okay, so I love this. The first line is, you play inside musical notes that slip away to have coffee.
That is cool.
Yes, I love that.
You know, no one can love your work more than you do.
I agree.
Because I have sent things out I thought were mediocre and maybe somebody else would think they were better. Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. No one can love your work more than you do. So tell us another line you love.
I think that this one is, I love this one. Like drums leaving tunnels inside me.
I like that one too.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you bring the poem home with the last line?
With the last line, I beat the moon at midnight, fetch the north star from the sky, place it neatly on your pillow and curl inside your ripened notes. These are all the things that are consistent in the poem. And it just, you know, it has the rhythm. It talks about a drum, talks about the tunnel. It comes back to placing, the greatest thing that you can do is place a moon on someone's pillow.
Oh, I agree. And only you can do that.
Yes, only I can do that.
In poetry.
Yeah, you can only do that in poetry. And then curl inside ripened notes. That, to me, is a maturity, a development. Before she walks into the musical notes, she kind of slips away and have coffee break. But now she's curled inside of his ripened notes. So that's different.
Oh, that is so intimate.
Yes.
That is so intimate. Where were you when you wrote that?
I'm always in the same place when I write.
Where?
In my bedroom. That is my space right by the window. I can look out.
You have a certain table and chair?
I do have
I write in bed. I like to write
you
in bed.
Do
you write longhand?
Longhand.
Mm-hmm.
I have to write
Me
because
too.
It feels more intimate.
Mm-hmm. It has to go through my veins.
Exactly.
Too. And then when you type it up, that's another revision.
It is.
And do you do a lot of outtakes?
I do a lot of revisions. It's required because sometimes I notice in my writing that I can become very wordy and my poems are long.
Are you working on a third book now?
I am.
And how many poems are into it?
I'm actually 25 poems in.
And already. Are they all words I've never heard before?
Words you've never heard before.
And where are they coming from?
Everything is coming from here, you know, when I say from here.
You're a funnel, though.
Yeah.
Just a funnel of the world. So you must be gathering images all the time.
I think the greatest thing about being a poet is that everything inanimate or, you know, that have life certainly gives us the ability to give life to a thing, even a tree, you know, the dead leaves. They have movement. They have sound. So everything has purpose. Nothing's wasted.
Read us a final poem.
A poem walks into the room, excited to tell you something. The wind is friendly or something. The audience waits for the shiny new lines, like the first day of school. The poem is dressed in long flowing descriptors and metaphors as smart as bow ties. Verbs that snatch rigid thinkers into whipped cream. This poem believes it's so impressive that it reaches into an emotional audience, pulls the biggest teardrop from the cheek of a famous poet, swings it back and forth like a pendulum, hypnotizes the audience, then takes a very thin needle, gently pokes the teardrop, which bursts into a colorful waterfall of words that flow through the hearts and minds of the audience. They clap and laugh and cry and smile. The poem waits for the audience to settle down, to see if any words touch one person, one spirit, one thought in a way that it sticks to the soul. Many poems wander into a room, stand before an audience, and simply hang in the balance long after the writers write and the poet releases a poem. But this poem, tilted with the hope of being more, waits and still worries if it touch one soul. Maybe there aren't enough foolish words to convince an audience that this poem is destined for greatness. Maybe the fact that this poem does not boast of soft kisses tucked in the corner of playful pages, or having words dance across autumn branches covered in cobwebs. This poem becomes glassy-eyed with rice and riddle, holds a pen that believes it will still write words that will be remembered. The poem kneels down on dirty knees, a smart bow tie, sniffs the right corner of his page that smells of peach cobbler and song, escorts the last words, takes a stiff bow, and leaves the room, never knowing if it left an impression.
The voice of Diane Wilbon Parks, Rice and Riddle, Dirty Knees, Smart Bow Tie. And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witterbinner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation. Additional support from Friends of Poetry, Hiram LaRue, Candace Katz, and Avide Shashani. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.